This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting November 18th, 2008.
I'll call this meeting to order. This is the employee assembly meeting for Wednesday, November 18th, 2009. It is 12:20 p.m. We are meeting in B12 Bay Hall today with Mary Opperman as our special guest and Mike Powers following her. And I would like to, Jason Seymour, chair. I'd like to get started with the roll call. David Brooks, Hempa, Zhang Tao, Tanya Grove,
here.
Linda Kroll Howell,
here.
Ned LaSalle. Ned emailed me and said he may not be able to attend the meeting today. Leon Lawrence,
present.
Alan Mittman is not able to join us today. Leslie Morris,
here.
Gemma Osborne,
here.
Gemma, sorry. Tim Ostrander?
Here.
C. Lee Phillips?
Here.
Jason Seymour, present. Gary Stewart is not able to attend the meeting today. And Beth McKinney, employee elected trustee, is not able to join us today. We got Ben. Ben? Yeah, Hefner? GPSA, present. Okay. And we have Amy O'Donnell from the Office of Assemblies. Okay. All right. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go right into our business of the day with a discussion with VP Mary Opperman. We've submitted some talking points to her in advance, and I'm going to just pull up that list and I guess ask Mary if there's any specific spot that you want to start on, or just go from the top?
Let's go from the top. So
okay.
The questions that I have are how many staff have been laid off? Do you want me to answer it?
You have a music.
Well,
we'll
turn off my phone. Okay, there you go. How many staff have been laid off so far? How many have found reemployment? Is that? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Just so you know, with our Tractor Jack systems, it's kind of hard for us to answer questions like this when we get them at 4:15 the night before our meeting. So if you could possibly give us a little more notice next time, that would be fabulous.
Our apologies for that. That was.
This is what we have. Right now, we have 104 staff currently on layoff. I just don't have all of the information in front of me. I think on a running tally, there's been about 300 people, give or take, laid off. But that's since all of this started. But that's a rough, that's a hard number to give because that includes we lost early last fiscal year, we lost a big grant. So that number includes a big grant loss. 63 people going back to July 1, 2000. Yeah, 288, sorry. 288 layoffs. Since July 1, 2008, 63 have found reemployment, 51 back at Cornell, 12 externally. 2 returned to school, 7 had their layoffs rescinded, 11 accepted reductions in hours, and 33 took the SRO.
For your numbers, you consider SRI to be in the layoff numbers?
If you were still employed here when the SRI was offered and you were eligible, we let you take it if you wanted it. So 30 of the people that were on layoff notice and were eligible took it.
Oh, that's right, because the SRI numbers were much higher. There were
hundreds of people.
432. Of the open positions at Cornell, what percentage were filled by internal versus external? About half, it's about split, 50-50. A little bit more by external than internal. So they almost all start out at with internal postings, but then if we don't get candidates, we go externally. So actually lately, we've been getting a little more internal movement. I think it's helped actually to have the president say something. So we're getting better pools lately. We have time where we weren't getting any internal candidates at all for jobs. Some jobs are going right out externally at the same time. Those are almost all in the research areas. And any research jobs that are STEM money, we're putting out internal, but we're putting them out externally at the same time. Because you get the money, you have to get the job. So how is it working with a consulting company hired to support layoffs? We haven't done a formal survey, but we're getting good feedback. People seem to like them.
What's the name of that company?
Wedge Consulting.
Are they Ithaca based or Syracuse or?
They're Syracuse based. Oh. I think Syracuse based. They come down and meet with people here. Why did we select an outplacement partner? Well, because they help people. There is just no way that HR could do what they do. They have tools and support services, and they also have, even though a lot of people really want to work back at Cornell, we knew early on that we wouldn't be able to place. We just wouldn't have that many jobs. So we knew that people were going to have to work outside, and so we just felt that it was only fair to give people the full services, and it, we just knew we wouldn't have the capacity in HR. So we thought it was a better move to give people professionals. Plus, we're not professionals in the services surrounding layoffs, so they get a case manager if they want one at Cornell. So they have both services available to them in the beginning. And so I think it's just a better, it's more help.
And is that something that will continue to be offered for future layoffs, do you think? Or?
Until the money, the contract is, we've used up half of what the university gave us. So if we use up all of it, and then we still aren't in budget alignment, we'll have to go back and ask for more money.
Mary, how long does Wedge consult with an employee after they've been laid off?
That's a good question. I actually don't remember. I think it's 3 months. Our laid off employee signing service useful? Yeah, I mean, basically, we're getting great feedback from people. I think the service is most useful at the very beginning when people just don't know where to turn. And it's someone who's, they have these pros who have helped people through this, and they put them through the resume writing and how to interview for jobs. Plus, it's someone to talk to who's been through this with other people before, and they know how to help somebody go through all of this. And that's also someone who's different from the case manager who helps them connect to the benefits. That's the Cornell person gets them all the benefits information and everything. So will this service be offered in the future? Yeah, I mean, assuming that we can continue to fund it, that's our intention. The question was connecting at Cornell. It was a service that it was a job fair we had in October to try to have a forum to connect individuals on layoff status with Cornell recruiters for open jobs. It wasn't really big. We had about 17. We had more recruiters than we had people. So we had 17 individuals on jobs, layoff status attendant, 21 case managers. it's only one person so far got a job that way, but we're going to do it again in January. So every little bit helps. So I'm going to try again. anyway, these are all services that we're going to continue to work on. I think that's all. I think that's all the questions I had. I don't know.
Okay.
There's something else I can add that we just put in place too as part of OHR, is that people who are on the F status were now getting a counselor from our Cornell sponsored FSAP program to help them through the course of the whole year. So they will have free counseling services as well.
In January, the OHR website will be redone, and the Caring Community website, which is a little hard to find, and then the current website will be up and running, and I think that'll help too. So,
I'm curious, do you know in an average year how many people are laid off without?
Under 100.
Under 100.
But, you know, we don't have an average year because we've had some pretty bad years with lots of research dollars. So we've had a couple of years where we lost big, big grants and went over 100. And then we've had years where we didn't lose a single grant and we've only had like a dozen. So it goes up and down. But it's almost always been in the past for two reasons. We lost state funding and we lost research grants. This is the first time since I've been here that we've had operating funds layoffs.
So the number that you gave,
$88,000,
all operating fund layoffs?
No.
No.
That includes that big. We lost one really big research grant in the beginning of FY09. So right around July and August, I think, was that big research grant. And then a lot of those are on the state side. So we haven't done a huge amount of layoffs, really. But it's just that we haven't ruled them out. That's what causes a lot of people. And we have done some, and we're a camp that has done none. So I think that's what, you know, so a couple dozen when you didn't do any on the endowed side feels like a huge number. If you knew someone who was one. And the fact that I think a lot of what is going on right now is just that there's so much talk about change on the campus. You know, the colleges all did those reimagining, which everyone keeps calling reimaging, reimagining things. So like arts and sciences was sent all over the place, and then Cal's actually is a really like collapsing departments. And then there's Bain, you know, Bain's has got that spans and layers thing, which nobody, including me, understands, and, you know, that's all about, and they're all about people, right? And everyone kind of knows it's not going to be the faculty, so, you know, it's just vague and scary, and nobody really knows what it means, and so it's not so much about actual job loss, it's about constantly talking in an abstract way about job loss, you know, time frames, and
so with that said, are the layoffs, the operational layoffs, are they, they're because, what causes an operational layoff?
The budget.
Of an individual unit?
Yeah, so last year, everyone had to take a 5% budget cut.
Right.
And so in a number of our areas, we kept jobs open. That's how we got, like, OHR, we didn't have to lay anybody off because we had job openings. So we just didn't fill them. And that's how we got our 5% cut. But in other places, there were no job openings. So they had to lay people off. And in other places, they used the SRI savings. That's how they got their 5% cut. So it just depended on the area. This year, there's really not been any job openings because nobody's leaving because the economy's in the toilet. So some people have more savings from the SRI that they can use, but most people used them last year. And the budget office hasn't told us how we're getting our cuts. So that's why everybody's just waiting, and they don't know what's going to happen. And then in the meantime, the provost had everybody do those reimagining. And so nobody knows, right? And so everybody is just nervous.
Yeah.
So what is the thinking for revealing that information? Is it beginning of the year? Is, like, with, say, the Bain report? And
right, so
what's the time frame, I guess?
I mean, I'll tell you what I think but don't know, because I'm not, this is all being run really by the provost area, but the Bain stuff seems to be focusing in on the administrative areas, so HR, finance, to some extent communications, facilities, and IT seem to be the areas that are being focused in on. I suspect, but don't know, that those areas will probably get a cut of some type. On the academic side, it doesn't look to me like those will come with like a cut, but they'll have this strategic plan to be more than they can be, right? Like, that'll just keep going.
Which might be an ongoing, over the course of X number of years.
Right. And so what I think that will be more about, if they want to be something else, they'll have to do it within their own, the same budget envelope, as opposed to just growing it, because we don't have new money. Then, the rest of the savings will be these efficiency ideas that Bain is producing, and that's that spans and layers idea, which has to do with this concept that they have that I don't fully understand, and this is this idea of mill management, where they talk about, this is spans and layers, where you have fewer layers between the top of the organization and the bottom of the organization, and that those people have more people reporting to them. So conceptually, this makes all the sense in the world. But when you try to apply that in a decentralized university, it's very hard for me to apply it. So when you look at, like,
each department is its own thing, so it's sort of.
Well, they didn't apply it to the academic department.
Okay.
So it wasn't applied there. Mm-hmm. So that's what, 40% of the organization. So you can see how it would work, like, in the custodial area, right, where everybody does the same thing, right? But when we tried to apply it, for example, in environmental health and safety, they said, so, for example, you have a biosafety area, and you have a radio, I'm still learning that area, but something related to, like, radioactive stuff. And each of those areas have, like, two people in them. So, in spans and layers, couldn't one person oversee both areas? Now, I'm no expert, but I think not. Like, right, both these areas have certified people running them, and it's kind of important that they actually know what they're doing, because I think biosafety is different from, right? So when you, like, actually apply it there, no. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at it in a university, it's not so simple. That's what you do. So you take the concept, which in the generic form makes sense, and then you try to actually apply it. I think, not sure exactly how much there is there. Right. So, yeah. Not sure what you get out of it.
So you don't see sort of across the board faculty cuts next year? Do you see it more as the big plan unfolds? Like, if they dissolve a department, some of those faculty may go away. Or
well, of course, faculty we're not going to cut at all.
Well, tenure, but what about, like, lecturers?
Well, we've already cut lecturers, actually, a lot of them. That would have been the tidy area, percentage-wise, the biggest cut, bigger than staff. I don't know how much more you can cut there.
What areas were those? Like chemistry?
No, it was mostly in the humanities. It's actually mostly in arts and sciences. They had arts and sciences at a very lean college. They had very hard for them to make their cut. So they didn't want to, but they had very little place to cut. So they cut a lot of indoor teaching their lectures and senior lectures. That would be hard for that college, I think, actually, to do much more. I probably shouldn't say that, but cause I don't know what the provost will do. But that's a very, very, very lean college. The colleges generally it's tough in a college. You know, they just don't have that much.
In Cal's, I thought we were reducing the number of faculty, but maybe they won't replace them when they retire.
That's right. And it's Cal's has a plan where they do plan to reduce, but what they plan to do is they'll, as they go, they won't replace mm-hmm. them. That is one college that plans to reduce. But overall at the university, that will happen, but the university has a plan to grow in other mm-hmm. areas. I don't think you'll see an overall reduction in faculty. If you look at our overall student to faculty ratio, it's high. So we couldn't really afford to reduce our faculty very much. It's actually very hard for me to imagine where we would reduce our people. One of the difficulties that we have here is we didn't really grow our staff or our faculty very much. So we didn't get into this situation because we grew our workforce. Mm-hmm. So when you look at our financial situation, it's not because we grew like Topsy. We grew. We grew our staff in certain areas. But we grew our IT staff. Everybody did. Mm-hmm. Not just Cornell. We grew our development staff. We did that on purpose. The revenue generator. We grew in research. Came with the new money. I mean, every place you grew, I can explain exactly why we grew. It'd be hard to argue with mm-hmm. it. But we didn't grow like Topsy. We grew, I would say, in a moderate way. We grew our faculty a little bit, not very much. We grew in areas almost always where research went to. So when you look at the financial problem, it isn't because we grew our workforce. So when you have to come back down, that's the biggest source of our cost. I know we've done this before, but our growth and cost came from the fact that we built buildings with the understanding that we were going to fund those buildings with gifts. Mm-hmm. And the gifts didn't come. So we had to pay for those buildings with operating budget. The operating budget can't absorb those costs, so the only other area of operating costs mm-hmm. are people. And that's a tough go. So I think what we're basically trying to do now is try to hope you grow back, try to find some places you can save, try to start doing some stuff. It's a little bit of a dance, right? Mm-hmm. And you try to find those other non-personal cost savings, and we are going to have to cut some people. I think that's just inevitable. But there is a point at which you say, there's a lot of people already gone. Mm-hmm. And that's the... that's the hard part. Bain says there's more.
I'm sure. Isn't Bain's final report in there?
Part of Bain's final report is in. That's what I just told you, that focus on IT, focus on, mm-hmm. And now what they're helping us do is put together that project management office. That's the next step. So they're staying a little bit longer because they gave us that report. And I sort of can't. The spans and layers thing's completely. I'm trying. I just can't sort of get that. It's theoretically I get it, and I don't even disagree with it because I hear from a lot of staff that having a boss over two people is really claustrophobic. So I get the concept, but I don't get the savings concept. So theoretically, I understand it, but it doesn't necessarily mean I think there's any savings there. You know what I mean? So I get the concept of it, but I don't necessarily think you can take out a person. I think you can find better ways to work, but I don't necessarily think there's any savings there. So
Well, because that supervisor still has work to do.
Ah, thank you very much.
And if they're only supervising two people, that's not their workload. Right. They have other workloads.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what I tried to say is, and the other factor, so of course I'm not the most popular person saying at the moment, but the other factor I tried to say is that we have a lot of places where that yes, there's a little teeny department, but the department maybe should have five people. It only has two.
Right.
So, you know, I have a benefits department, for example, that runs two sets of benefits. So the health department has one beleaguered manager and two people supporting six health plans, two that the state offers, and the rest that the private side offers. One could argue that is a very small player or whatever that is. But one might argue that in a business, you would have five or six people reporting to that manager, right? So is that a spans and layers problem or is it a staffing problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's very hard to look at these charts are like this massive thing. And so you can't just look at this chart and think you know the answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go unit by unit by unit in order to know whether or not there's any savings. It's very time intense. So they're going to help us. And I keep hoping for this massive rebound of the stock market. Huge gift from someone, and this will all go away.
Changing the subject
a little bit.
It's still not too far away, but regarding your own position and those of others in the executive ranks, you have picked up substantial additional responsibility. And I just wondered how that was going.
Oh, it's just ducky. So one of the truths of all of this is that you save a lot more money by eliminating jobs at the top, you know, like
mm-hmm.
enough. So we eliminated an executive vice president and a vice president's position and all of the support that went with both of those. And then if you were here on the day that they gave out the work,
you didn't go home.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
We're simplifying the top of the organization. You have to do that. You just have to. You can't ask everybody else in the organization to take on more and not ask the people at the top to do the same thing. So, right now, the way it looks, and I haven't finished the reorganization of HR, but the way it looks right now, I think there's something like 17 direct reports. And Bain seems to think that's very good. So somehow I think I'm celebrated. But they're great people, and they're all doing a great job. So it's.
But does this mean also, what if, for example, what if a unit wanted to reconfigure a position and make it more sort of do other things? Is that how does that process happen? Do you have to go through HR and go through that whole thing, or can an individual?
So if somebody did more work, we would be happy with that.
Yeah, that actually would be, well.
You wanted to reimagine or
reimagine something.
They would go through HR.
They would have to go through HR in order to do that, even if it was the same funding source and all.
Yeah, and we're encouraging that actually to try to, every time, part of our problem right now is not a lot of movements going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of open jobs. But where a job comes open, we're really asking that they not just fill it. That first, is there something out of the job that you can just end? Because it is getting to the point where it's very hard to ask somebody to take on more work. So the first thing is, can you stop something in that job or in another job, because to just keep distributing the same amount of work is just starting to get to be too much.
Mm-hmm.
But then after you've done as much of that as you can, ending work, can you take what's left and start moving work around and changing jobs?
Mm-hmm.
That's the next thing. And then that's changing work. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the long run, this can be very good for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can change portfolios in a way that over time actually creates new and interesting jobs. And won't, you know, so in my case, you know, it's time for me to do something different. Exactly mentioned this, but that's good. Now, you know, right now, mm-hmm. you know, right now it's just more.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, this mm-hmm. will create an opportunity, not right now, but this will create an opportunity for someone over time to pick up the HR job that, you know, can't happen right now because we don't have the money. But that will happen over time. That wouldn't have happened in the old organization. So, you know, people have to be patient, but that will stream out over time. And so, you know, that's what you hope for, right, is that after we find our financial footing, that this will have created new opportunities for people.
Just a quick question. Are there a lot of instances where people, kind of related to Celie's question, like where sometimes a person reports to two different managers because of their 50-50 split time?
Mm-hmm.
Does Bain, to your knowledge, know that they've identified those types of things? Because I'm sure it complicates the reporting, because if you have one person and they're 50-50 or 75-25 or...
Oh, I'm sure they haven't yet. I mean, their review, as far as I can see, has not been of the whole campus. It's only been a certain thing. And I don't think their intention was really ever to look at the whole campus. I think they just picked, because there's whole parts of the campus that aren't going to be reviewed. That's the way it looks to me, anyway. I mean, I can't imagine they're going to spend a lot of time, and again, I could be wrong. I don't think they're going to spend a lot of time on areas that we're not going to focus on. They're going to pick the areas they think you can save money in.
What would be some of the areas that you're not going to focus on?
Well,
I don't think they're going to put a lot of time in the academic areas. I just don't. I mean, that doesn't mean that those academic areas, because of the academic review, the college deans are looking at those areas, but Bain's not. I'm hoping that they're not going to put a lot of time into an area like the police. You know, I could be wrong, but I don't think you ought to be shortcutting your safety area or Gannett, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are certain things that certainly should be as efficient as you can be, but you ought not be looking at your core safety areas and trying to cut them, in my humble opinion.
Do we have any other questions for Mary?
Yeah, I have one last one. I know that, like, there were no increases last year, but some people, Mary, you got to go, I guess.
Yeah.
But real quick, and you don't have to answer this now, but the question is, regarding, there were people that at certain levels that did get some extra bonuses. And looking in the future, and I know we still have, what, $135 million deficit? Is that going to remain the same next year, or is it too early to tell?
Well, the president has made a commitment to do everything he can to put salary increases back into play this year.
Okay.
I support him 100%. The level of those is in play.
Yeah.
I think we won't be looking at anything wild.
Yeah.
But I personally do not believe that you can ask people to take on more and more work with no salary increases. He and I won't agree about the top.
Right.
I personally think people at the top will go another year. But then again, the people at the top hate me.
like
But, you know, you can make a lot of money by not giving the people at the top increases. He and I have never agreed on that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the majority of people can be expected to take on all this additional work and to also live with all this uncertainty without salary increases, even if they're not a token. I mean, it has to be more than a token, but even if they're modest, and he and I agree on that.
Well, as you know, my name is Leon.
We have a bit of a challenge with our board on that, but I think that on that he's unwavering, as am I. So I think we'll proceed on that. Now again, you know, that adds to our deficit.
Sure.
But we've said this before. In the act, we will get through this. You know, your job is to help us continue to keep people the best we can, their morale as high as we can. And the majority of people who are here today will be here when we're done. You can't expect those people to be here with the best morale you can have, given everything, if you've pushed them to the limit. So, you know, you got to do what you can for them, recognizing that everything we put into a salary increase adds to the challenge on the other end.
Thank you very much.
Somebody's taking minutes. Don't put the people at the top hate
me. On the recording.
We just talk over that part.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have fun at your next meeting.
Thank you. I'm going to see the EHS people.
And
that's a scary meeting.
All right, before Mike arrives, let's quickly take a look at our minutes of our November 4th meeting, please. You can get those. Take a moment to review those minutes, and then I'll entertain a motion.
The paragraph that had me in it, there were fig pieces missing, and I rewrote it.
Okay.
And my name doesn't have a hyphen in it.
Okay.
And there was a correction submitted by Ned, which was just a simple name swap. Did you get that, Amy?
Yes.
Okay.
And I have, under committee reports, the last paragraph, the Unsung Hero Award. I think that just the conversation that when we were talking about the award that we go at the president's address to staff. This year we gave it to an unsung hero. I think that just got convoluted in there. It's not really another award, right?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't here. So you
I know. Oh, I know. It's just telling me. I think the other E award is the president's, the award that we give to the president's address, the whatever it's called.
Employee appreciation.
Employee appreciation. Yeah, that would be the word.
So, Tanya, your suggestion is to do what?
To change it to say there's another EA award, the Employee Appreciation Award. Last paragraph is committee report, support communications committee, page 2.
Second page.
Support communications committee.
Okay. Do you need to read my changes to everyone to approve it? Like I said, there were pieces missing that it just didn't work well together at all.
Okay, so we're looking at the section under emergency grant fund. Hi, Mike. Please have a seat with you just a minute.
Emergency grant fund.
Page 3.
Al Paul Hollow mentioned that the Johnson School also runs a similar fund specifically for Johnson School employees. The EA fund is capped at $1,000 per person, while the Johnson School cap is $5,000. She said that the Johnson School employees might apply for grants from the Johnson and the EA, and the EA should think about that. In terms of the emergency grant fund, she stated that regardless of what we decide, we should ensure we have consistent criteria in selecting employees to receive the fund to avoid any audit concerns. Alan Mittman said the EA should try to find out if anyone wants to take control of the fund. Linda mentioned that Workforce Diversity and Inclusion was previously interested in taking the fund and is still prepared to do so. Jason Seymour suggested that Gemma Osborne try to find as much historical material in the emergency grant fund as possible and noted there were still many questions to be answered. Alan Mittman stated that a member of the EA could attend the HR quarterly meetings and that Kathy Sullivan should be contacted to make this happen. Linda Crowell Howell added that the EA could ask to add at least one member to serve on a committee governing the fund if it is moved to HR. Under personnel policy,
Amber Dunkhouse said the meetings would take place at Trillium, but she was not sure of the time or date. Linda Crowell said she would like to suggest an EA review of the flexible work policy. She's interested in looking at ways the policy can better support the bargaining unit and hourly staff. The meeting will be planned for after Thanksgiving.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to be, the reflection of minutes are not supposed to be a verbatim recount in words of what happens at a meeting.
Right.
So
there was just one part that was very concerning to me because it suggested that because there were two grants that it was an audit conflict, and that didn't really make sense at all.
Okay.
There wasn't an audit conflict at all for that reason. And that's why I need to restructure it.
So we'll have those sections replaced with.
Okay. Thank you.
Do I have a motion to approve the minutes as multi-amended?
Motion.
Motion from Tanya, second by Gemma. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. Minutes from November 4th, 2009 are approved. Okay, we're going to switch back to the business of the day, which is a discussion with Mike Powers on the cost savings at Cornell and the president's suggestion box and communication outreach of that. Welcome. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. I can't believe you have two peculiar cost reduction conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this
is always me from what it was in the past.
To go on the record and
no
say
more state, right?
this is in our budget, and employees, assembly members are volunteers, and we do meet during the lunch hours. So.
I'm just. So I guess the best way to do this, if this works for you guys, is I'll just go through the various committees that were formed and bring you up to speed on what's been done. In a couple of cases, some of the things are sort of getting in the way, which is in most cases, as you do, lack of money. So, and then just open it up to questions afterwards. Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I started with energy management. I've gotten updated by all the chairs and the people running these things. They have spent most of their time conducting. They're sort of in the the blue sky, trying to come up with ideas on ways to save money, and then they're probably the ones that are most impacted by the lack of funding, because there's usually, in most cases, there seems to be an investment needed in order to set up systems that will save money. So that seems to be the thing that's handcuffing them, but they're doing, one of the things that they're looking at is retrofitting the lighting in greenhouses. They seem to be doing a lot with cows. Making modifications to growth chambers, and they're developing an energy conservation outreach program with cows that should be successful, I think, and serve as sort of a model for what other colleges might do. So, but Jim was quick to point out that it's really a funding issue at this point. So, but he's confident that it will be forthcoming at some point as things get healthier. In grounds and building maintenance, you probably saw some of what went on. Suddenly, a lot of our lawns were suddenly becoming natural areas over the summer, which I thought was kind of neat myself. I thought it was kind of attractive. They did go through with a reduction on seasonal plantings, which saved a number of thousands of dollars. They optimized the winter closings for pathways, and which reduces all the maintenance, plowing, and salt associated with that. There was a recommendation that salt application be reduced. I couldn't get an answer on whether they did that or not. Somebody pointed out that, okay, well, that may save some money, but you're opening yourself up to a lot of exposure to lawsuits for accidents for not salting properly. So I'm sure that probably did not get done, or if it did, it was very minimal. Mm-hmm. The one interesting thing, the other thing I didn't mention in all of this is I think the thing that's hovering over all of us and a lot of the things in this area is BAME.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what kind of recommendations they're going to come through with. They're certainly going to have staffing implications. They're going to have budgetary implications. It all trickles down to the things that these groups are trying to do. But one of the areas that I know that has been looked at are the shops.
Mm-hmm.
And areas in which methods in which to make them more efficient, to make them less costly. If you've ever had your office painted and you got the bills, you know, it's hard to rationalize. And that's tied into, I think they're looking at the cost recovery in general. I don't know if you have ever dealt with any of our, like our photography unit or our publications office, which are cost recovery. And it's just not a, it's not an efficient way to do business. We operate under all these arcane rules that say, and as they should, you should not be making money. You shouldn't have a positive balance at the end of the year, because that means you're charging too much for your services. But as someone who has dealt with this for many years, and has built labor rates and tries to keep these things going, it's one little instance can, if you have an employee who gets sick for a long time, right there, it can throw you off. You have their costs, you don't have their revenue generating capacity anymore. So it's a really inefficient way to go about things. The money folks have admitted this for years, and hopefully they are going to take a good hard look at it. I'm all for it. It drives me insane. One of the things that I discovered on the negative side was the influx of H1N1, which incidentally does seem to be making somewhat of a comeback. It's not getting the attention this time around that it was back in September. I'm guessing, and I didn't have time to check, that some of the maintenance cleaning costs in the buildings went up. So they were working extra long and extra hard and spending a lot more money on stuff. Disinfectants and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's where they are. In the area of food and hospitality, I spoke to Terry Boslett, who is, I'm not sure if he's with Cornell Catering or she just oversees them, but she said, and you may have seen this in your own offices, that spending with Cornell Catering has just gone through the floor. I mean, everybody is really cutting back. And I can give you a couple of examples just on the groups that I hang out with. In our office, we've gone from four division meetings a year to two, and each one typically costs around $3,000. And we no longer serve any refreshments for all our regularly scheduled meetings, which, you know, we're nominal, a couple hundred bucks a meeting, but if you multiply that by, you know, maybe 20 or 30 meetings a year, that starts to add up. HR, who I checked with, has done basically the same thing, and I'm sure that if you've experienced this in your own, you know, week-to-week activities within your offices. So I think it's modest at the office level, but if you multiply that by hundreds of offices on campus, I think the savings there are considerable. I will mention that nobody as of yet is doing real hard numbers to compare or compare 10 with 09 or 08. My business officer and I just got the ability to look at something called SpendViz, which is what purchasing uses to track costs in different areas. And it's really, it's pretty amazing. So, you know, we'll be using that to look at things as this fiscal year starts to close out. Dining halls removed craze. I have no idea how much money that saves. And
so what are they? Are you carrying their food?
Well, you can't. I guess the theory is you also can't carry as much, though, unless you're doing a Belushi animal house. like this. And there's anecdotal evidence that I think is good evidence, and it's like my own wife's. The travel spending has really gone down.
Mm-hmm.
My wife works for government relations and is in Washington on average, you know, at least once a month for the first of the year, and she's cut back probably by half on the travel she's doing. So that will certainly continue. HR, certainly the big accomplishment there was the SRI program that cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $35 million to implement. But after they get past those costs, which I'm told, Linda, you're good at math. How long will it take them to pay that off so they start to accrue savings?
Oh, up to $35 million?
I mean, it was a year's salary and benefits,
and then
plus 3 years' worth of retirement.
Right, which was another 30%.
Right. So 15 months?
To pay
which
it
is
off.
My mind.
Yeah, I know it was going to be at least a year.
Yeah.
To to pay that off.
So if it's 15 or 16 months, but at that point they've achieved a, and again my math is a little shaky, but at least a $25 million annual savings.
Yeah.
So that's not insignificant. Yeah. And
is this travel?
But they replaced some of those people.
People have been coming back.
I'm going to ask you about that.
Well, again, with me it's anecdotal, but I'm seeing faces. Nobody's back in full-time position. I don't think anyone is back where there are benefits being paid, but there do seem to be people back. I ran into one just yesterday, 20 years.
Our staff retired. The person who retired on ours, they filled their position.
Did they? Well, they were accepting, I'll call it a hardship exemption, for want of a better term, because there were people who had to be replaced. I mean, there was an office over in the library, I think, where, you know, like six or seven people were retiring. So it does put a bit of a crimp in your operation. You have one person coming in. So those types of considerations, sure. So that's going to, you know, pull back from some of the savings, but it, you know, it's still a lot of money. Some other things that they've done, in talking to Betsy Schreier, the Service Awards Dinner, which is every year. I don't know if any of you have been. You probably have. It's in the Raymond Room, and it's big. It's, I'm guessing, you know, 1,000 people or more. And so they've cut back on that. They reduced the menu choices. They stopped training programs. So it's, again, small increments that over time add up. We're no longer printing the work-life section in the Cornell Chronicle, which has some savings. And they reduced their spending on the open enrollment packages this fall by about $25,000 by not doing home mailings.
Which is great, I love.
Yeah,
it was, particularly if you and your spouse both work here.
Home mailings
for the opening.
Oh, sending all the information.
Yeah, we get two of everything from Cornell. Right. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, that saves quite a bit. IT, I don't have a lot to say about it. what I do have to say is anecdotal. I know that they're being looked at really carefully by Bain. And that, combined with the dissolution of Coupa, is going to have some serious ramifications.
I want to know what that means.
Coupa, Cornell University Finance and Administration, Steve Golden's world,
okay.
Which they're, you know, sort of dismantling and sticking things in different places. One thing I did get in just hallway conversation, a couple of things. One was that there's been discussion around considering IT a utility, much as you would consider the water and electricity, and the sun, which makes sense. I mean, it's basic to doing our jobs, and it's not going to go away. And this other anecdotal thing I got, which is somewhat linked, one of the recommendations was to increase the use of open source software. And a colleague of mine who goes to the ITMG meetings.
ITMC meetings.
Apparently, there's been discussion about some millions of dollars worth of customized software that gets developed on campus every year where, you know, I have a problem. So rather than go to the market or go to, you know, a colleague or another unit to see if they have a solution, we spend a ton of money to have the thing developed, you know, custom made for us. And apparently these types of solutions are sitting all over campus and literally add up to millions of dollars.
Yeah, and then the person that leaves that made it is in
trouble. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, in fact, we were faced with this problem in our publications office, and we went out and bought something called OpenAir, which is a tracking and billing system. So if the IT turnover is severe, there's no loss of knowledge.
Is your suggestion that the open source model is should be disallowed because of the cost of trying to maintain it?
No,
open or the
source
other way around.
The other way around.
Oh, yeah.
And it sort of makes you wonder if there shouldn't be some sort of a some sort of a marketplace. I'll call it a marketplace. For want of a better term, where people can share what they're doing. We might be doing something that would be useful to half the people at the table and vice versa. And there have to be savings there. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible waste. It's a lot of fun for software developers and you know, most of the ones I know just love to, you know, dive into the problem and figure out how to fix it. But it is costly.
Could that have been done with PeopleSoft stuff?
That's a very big religious war.
I don't want to go there.
Well, actually now, Qali financial system that they're putting in is what they call a community source. It's open source, but those who are developing it, the universities that are developing it, have paid to be able to have say on how that open source is being developed. And over the long run, it's going to require a lot less customization than like a PeopleSoft where we purchased this business system that didn't have a lot of modules and stuff that were good for higher ed and took a lot of extra development dollars to make, plus we paid PeopleSoft for it.
Right,
and going more of these guys, community source, open source, really can lend themselves to some nice savings.
Yeah, sure.
As well as quicker implementation because it'll be more relevant to what we do, which I think is really great.
So I'll finish up with the two that I'm personally most familiar with, simply because I live in these worlds. Procurement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of you have used eShop. I'm not getting... It's not always the cheapest price.
No, it's not.
To be honest, we found that. But maybe over the long run it might be.
But it's not always buying in volume.
Yeah. Well, what's really great, I think, now is that they've actually put out, we just recently got an eShop newsletter that they've put out a protocol for you to follow up on a cheaper price and a way to deal with that, which I think was really important. So if you find something at a cheaper price, there's now a mechanism either to go with that cheaper price or work with purchasing to get them into eShop. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should be using all the feedback they get from campus. I mean, they believe me, they are completely open. They know that it's been really problematic. They're redesigning it. They're reconfiguring their staff to make it more efficient. They're sort of considering it, you know, eShop round one. And they're moving to eShop round two, three, and four.
I'm still really worried about its impact on the local community, though. And if Cornell loses, Ithaca loses any more businesses, if Cornell is already isolated, I'm just seeing it more and more every day, just even from our own little tiny bit of purchasing that we do. I mean,
right.
We get yelled at because, you know, we bought something from Race. You know, I just...
the people who operate solely in numbers will focus on getting the cheapest price, and frankly it probably won't be, I shouldn't speak in my opinion, are highly unlikely to really be considering the impact on local businesses. It's interesting to watch when Home Depot and Lowe's opened, and I figured, well, Bishop's, see them disappear in 6 months, but they're still hanging in there.
But they're not the same.
They're not the same store.
Yeah.
That was a great store on State Street.
Yeah.
And you still don't know how they're going. So that is a concern. Part of my job, about 10% of my time, is taking up product licensing, and I sort of have the same issues with dealing with the Nikes of the world as opposed to the guys down in the commons who make T-shirts. They're in competition with each other quite often, and I can sort of stay neutral because it's a very objective type of approach that we take to it.
I wonder what if there was some sound, because I know we have to move on, but I just had an idea. I mean, what would happen if we're looking at cost savings? We have a tremendous amount of resources here at the university. Used computer, just the technology alone.
Mm-hmm.
I know at one time we had ways of redistributing that material, and I'm wondering if we could beef that up and how much savings there would be. I don't need a state-of-the-art computer,
Right.
So, I just don't know if that's been explored enough. The problem with this eShop is that I think it sort of obscures the possibility of the reused part. So I'm just throwing that out.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
I have to attend a department meeting, so I'm going to turn the rest of the meeting over to David to finish up. And just let you know, you have 10 minutes more, so maybe a couple more minutes. questions for Mike, and there's just a few other things on the agenda. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Passing the gavel.
Passing the gavel.
You have a gavel.
This is a great
idea. No, that's a great idea. And again, who said there was a surplus list?
Yeah, there's like a
good to know. And I know there's a wide
one.
There's always there's a guy named Walt Smithers.
Yeah.
Everybody sees him. Yeah. Just seems to deal and use his office equipment and things like that. If you need something, you tend to call Walt. Or if you need to get rid of something, you call Walt. So that's there. The numbers for purchasing, apparently our current spending campus-wide on everything, including construction, is about $1 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they've targeted, Bain is saying, the way I hear it is Bain was saying 60, they were saying 20. They agreed to meet at 40, but now they're thinking 30 is more realistic.
Oh.
So the time will tell.
Are you talking about
savings?
$70 million savings? Like they want to cut $70 million from our purchasing?
No, they want to save $30 million.
Want to save 30?
Right, 30 to 40.
Right,
is the latest number I've seen. Mm-hmm. I hope that they're looking at North Carolina, which has come out of the other end of the Bain process, to see what they're doing and how it's working out. There's no question there are tons of opportunities. I mean, this place operating in silos as it does so often. There's so much repeating the same type of behaviors. And, it's just trying to figure out how to kind of get everybody talking to each other and thinking under one roof. So the last area which I can speak most informed about is printing, which I've been taking care of, and I've spoken to Gemma. Something we're doing. And Linda, here, let's look at that.
I did a little bit with Diane.
Okay.
It was, yeah.
So, to give you an idea, the only good numbers I had, or they're as good as we could get from purchasing, is 07. We're picking up 08 and 09. But the total spending on printing and the associated costs that go with it, like graphic design and writing and photography and distribution, everything, was $16.7 million. 9.1 of that was actual printing. So we are hoping to reduce that by 40-50%.
Wow.
If we can. There's no mandate. We don't have the ability to say to CALS, no, you can't do that. We wouldn't want to. We shouldn't be assuming that we have that sort of clout. This is not right. But what we've been trying to do is just make people aware of what they are doing in the print arena. I think a lot of things historically have gotten done because they've always been done. Are you doing this next year? Yeah. Well, have you thought about maybe not doing it and either reducing your print run and putting it online, or maybe not doing it at all and see what sort of impact it has? So people are listening. People are paying attention. It's really not surprising that when you're in a fiscal crisis, people are doing this without even, you don't even have to talk to them. I went around and I talked to all the communications directors and the colleges and the units, and they all were ready to show me, well, here's how we've cut over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is nothing, I told Tommy, we're not a catalyst for this. We're going on that. It's going to continue. I think that things like, research magazines, AA&D has a lot of printing costs, as you would imagine. And the big thing in reducing printing or stopping printing, the big decision, the question you have to ask yourself is, what does my audience want? Because if you have an audience that wants print and you go to electronic distribution, you're going to lose them. That's the worst thing you can do. Hotel did a survey of the recipients of their alumni magazine, and it was amazing because I expected to see a correlation between age and the wish to get paper. Not everybody wants paper. It's right across the board.
Wow.
It's really amazing. And so they're going to keep giving them paper, which they should do. But there are a lot of places that we've been able to, even in our organizations, give a couple of examples. You all know that the Chronicle no longer exists.
and
well, it does
online.
Well, online. It's online, but not part-time.
Yeah, but the paper version. And by doing that, we saved $107,000 a year in print costs. We are looking at, here's some other interesting numbers. There's also a sustainability angle to this, and this is kind of staggering. The Chronicle, over the course of the year, used 26 tons of paper. That's 11,000 copies a week. Courses of study, which the print run of which has slowly been diminishing, and we hope to take fully electronic. But last year they printed 14,500 copies, and it was $40,000, and it was 16 tons of paper. The telephone directory, which is going away, was 22 tons of paper. And the Cornell View Book, which goes out to potential students, that we produce with admissions. They do, every 3 years they do a redesign. But the most recent version, they printed 105,000 copies, $139,000, and was 40 tons of paper. And their audience is 16 and 17 and 18 years old. And they live here. And so in our conversations with admissions, they're really looking at moving to much smaller print runs. Set up, it's like a thing, a print-on-demand thing, where you would go online, go to the admissions website, the document would be there, and there'd be something to the effect that, for a paper copy of this publication, please call, blah, 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 and they'll send them one. But I know they can save tons of money. And they also spend about $250,000 a year in postage. Isn't that incredible? So savings are huge there. Going back to courses of study, we know exactly what has to be done there to take that fully online. Again, much like with some of the maintenance stuff, the utility stuff, there's an upfront cost of about $100,000 that they need to do in the first year, and because of a vendor that they're going to be using. And then after that, the savings really start to pile up. So it's just a one-time cost. So they're trying to come up with money for that. So the other thing we're doing, and again, Gemma and Linda have heard about this, we're setting up a system. It's almost ready to go live. We're calling the Content Portal/Digital Well project. And the idea being that it achieves a few things. It keeps people thinking about the need to print or the savings achieved by not. It provides us with a way to sort of gain some control over Cornell identity, graphic identity on publications that are done. And it will give us the ability to start to archive content in what we're calling the digital well. That is, because there's a lot of redundancy in what goes on around here. And somebody in engineering might need to know something about something in human ecology. And rather than calling, going over and talking and writing it up, they can go in and look and see if it already exists in this content management system. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be expensive. In my opinion, it needs a full-time curator, or possibly two over time as this thing grows. But ultimately, we want to have text, we want to have images, we want to have video, and it's just one place where you can go to see if what you need is there. And it also creates for the people who participate, the authors who participate, it's kind of a library of everything that you've done.
Cornell, yeah. Google, almost.
Yeah, right. And the neat thing about it, and I am not a techie, but when we started working on it, Dirk Swart, I don't know if any of you know Dirk, pointed out that he could set it up, and we'll set it up so that you go into the digital well and you want to do a search for Linda Kroll-Howe. And so anything that's in that particular database on Linda will kick out, but he can tie this into other existing websites and databases on campus. To the user, it's blind. So we can pull from anywhere that has information on you. You'll be delighted to know.
The problem about
just you.
I was going to ask you about a word that you mentioned. How does all this paper, how does that impact the 19 libraries that exist on samples?
That's a good question, man. I'm not really sure. When we first started this, the first thing I said to Derek was, are we reinventing the wheel here? Because it's sort of like the software problem I mentioned earlier. A lot of databases exist. Ours is really going to be tied largely to communications vehicles. And as Dirk gets permissions to do this, though, he can tie into the larger database. And there's DSpace and some of the others. But if it's built correctly, it can pull from everywhere.
So I guess what I'm saying, maybe the future library is right in front of you.
Yeah,
you don't have to go to your surface right on the laptop.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, that's the way it's all going to end up anyway. Yeah. So we hope to have a prototype that will go live in January. We're already starting to collect content. A lot of the stuff gets done here goes right through our publications office, so we already have it. And we're working with purchasing and printers to make sure that when a job is finished, in addition to the client getting the files, we'll get a set too that we'll be put into the well. And you and Linda and I have had one long conversation. Mm-hmm. Tommy's coming over on the 30th to meet with all the whole crew, Susan and all the associate teams, and Mike Riley and everybody to kind of lay this out a little more. So, but there's been general buy-in. Nothing's going to get put in there that people don't want to have put in there. Everybody has the right to say no for a variety of reasons. We don't care what the reasons are. We just don't want it there. Fine. No problem.
David, can I make a motion to extend the meeting for 10 minutes?
Does anyone else need the room after us?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're about out of time. If anyone has any really quick questions for Mike.
I'm fine if you want to stay.
I do have a meeting. I do.
There is.
Okay. Yeah, 1:30. At 1:30.
Oh. Anybody in the hall?
There was a person walked
out.
I'll check the door
of
the other
one.
Okay. I actually have one.
Do you want to have any other questions?
And I'm happy to come back next month.
Okay.
Maybe we should do that because
hopefully there'll be more.
Maybe if we can email you a couple questions that you could address next month.
Sure.
That would be helpful because I actually have three.
What's your email?
This will account for the weird email. My nickname is Mike. My real name is Frank, so it's FFP1.
Do we want to compile them and then send them to my
email? Yeah, we can email
instead of him getting
random. Yeah. Because I expected to get questions that I was going to have to go back to the various chairs anyway. So if you, whenever you want to compile them and send them to me, then I'll try and get them answered as best I can. And also, please, advice. Take all the ideas.
I have a very quick piece of advice. You can't find eShop. I mean, it's really, really hard to
it's
find.
It's really buried.
Oh yeah.
You can't search within Cornell.
You can't.
Really?
It's
you can, but it brings up it's like you know the, oh, okay. The Chronicle.
Multiple
the Chronicle art. Yeah.
CIT's page.
Purchasing.
Yes, I know, but what I think is to go to CIT at Cornell to get to find
eShop.
Yeah, you can't find it.
Committee reports, do you have anything from ILC?
No.
No?
No, but I do have two things to quickly talk about that are not, if we can.
Okay.
The resolution for Shorten's birthday thing and the card.
Okay.
And the what? So, President Shorten's birthday is on Monday. There's going to be a surprise birthday party at the campus store at noon with cake. But we have a very large card, which everyone needs to sign before they leave.
Okay.
And then we're trying to get it around to departments. David, are you taking this with you?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Today, just a quick thing. You get some interesting, it's kind of like running for political office. When you ask people to sign it, you also get their feedback. So,
whether you like it or not.
Well, I had one person who said, do I really want to sign this since I got laid off? And I'm just here in a temporary job, so that was interesting to field. And you know, are we going to get raises? I mean, there was a lot of questions. So just to prepare you for that. And
I think the advice should be just put all that aside.
Yeah, and I'm going to prove it's a birthday card. Yeah. It's a well wish.
For you, for what it is.
And I had a number of people who refused to sign it, so I just said okay. And also the student assembly and the GPSA, the graduate assembly. Are doing a resolution for Scorton's birthday. So Gary's very kindly put something together. If people want to look at it, I can send an email version if you want to discuss on email, but if we can, it's just really simple.
Wait, I want to question.
Yep. It's not supposed to be simple, it's supposed to be funny. They've gotten the wrong way. But this is our attempt at poking a little bit of fun And if people think it's okay as is, I'll just email them. If anybody has anything they want to add or change, but just take it back and I'll email it to you.
Tom Waits turned 60.
Yes, he did.
Tom Waits turned 60 when he was 30.
And he sounded it.
So can I email you if I have anything to add? Okay, that's great.
The only thing that I would think they had, and I can email it to you, although I don't know who they are, but I wonder if there's any famous physicians, since he's a physician.
Yeah, I look for musicians and
physicians.
Yeah. I think they're a little harder to find their ages. I'm not sure if he's famous. You know, these guys you could Google and you find them. So
Wikipedia is also a good place to find those things.
Yeah, I was going to mention Wikipedia. Plus it's a factual source. Everybody uses it in research.
If anybody has things that they think would be fun to add, but we're trying to make it something kind of funny and not
so
kind of,
you know, a little bit gross.
It is a surprise, yes. And Gary's hosting.
Okay.
So it's going to be at the
bookstore?
At the campus store on the second floor.
Okay.
At noon.
Monday. Do you mean
Monday?
By second?
New level. The upper level.
The
that little
on the same
area.
Level as this.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Okay. If we're good, she said a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. Oh, we didn't do the minutes.
We did lots.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everybody.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.